Sort of 794, June 21, 2008. This is lecture 3.2, the continuation of usability testing. Alright, so we want to make a group list of what we have there in, on page 62. Not everything fits on my screen, but so it is somehow with the goal of the test. And that may be a first thing to go in a group. I mean, that may be a first group for which we don't have a heading. So I'm going to just put down that we need a heading. What else goes in that group? You may need to look on your page because I can't show everything on the left side.
Perhaps what data is going to be collected and how will it be analyzed once it has been collected?
I think I would probably put that in here.
And the next one down, what are the criteria?
The last two, yeah.
I may put this one first, actually. Mm-hmm. So you get the...
How about what tasks will the users be asked to perform?
How
is that related to the goal of the test?
I think it's kind of a...
I was going to delete the things from over here. So we get a smaller set. I don't know, but...
Yeah, that's
more
of a... So you want to put the last one into this?
Yeah.
And I'm just going to use a shorter one. Oh, and I can put them here in between too. So the order is.
What data will be collected? Yeah, it's going to be collected and how will it be analyzed?
Okay, this is. I'm trying to.
It's towards the bottom.
Oh, here it is. Yeah. We could worry about how to arrange these things inside the sources, inside their groups. But I think these probably are reasonable groups. So, the rest of the market might not be arranged in too bad a fashion, but they'll... Can you see some further groupings in there?
Well, there's some that look like they're more focused on the system or the software and how that should be prepared prior to the test, ready. Whereas some of the other are about staff doing it or users. I might group the software, like the what software needs to be ready for the test, what should the state of the system be at the start of the test, together.
Okay, I think these are, and actually the two of them on the left, they are sort of form a group, which we may call, I don't know what you call it. Oh, I didn't want that. External arrangements. I somehow got outside my bolded, so I'm going to bold it again. So that would include where my old tests take place. And then which one goes to the system side?
Well, is what software needs to be ready for the test? What should the state of the system be at the start of the test? And what about the system?
Yeah, I think so. It's these three things. So this is sort of the test system. It's just been in that bullet over there and numbers them here. I probably would want these to be bullets, you know. I'm going to do that at the end. I'm not going to copy all this whole long thing about response times, but clearly that will be, I mean, that's one aspect of how the system should be ready. So all of these we did. So this leaves us with
stuff about
who you're testing. Yeah. I think I would put the users first.
Yeah, pick one.
But there may be more like they look called subjects, or some people in the research method actually object to subjects and they say participants.
I don't know if there was one in there. So what test tasks will the users be asked to perform? Could go with the users or in the test. I don't know which category you want that one in.
What tasks are they asked to perform?
So that either goes with the software state of the system, or it goes with who are the. I put it with the software state of the system.
Okay, let's just leave that open for now. I already copied that.
Where'd you put it?
I didn't. The test task I didn't do yet. And actually, let me do something here. This is real proof it's not good on that. No, that's how I wanted to do. See here, real proof it is not good at we talked about matching to the external, to the real world or whatever. If you just want to insert some space in front of a line, you can't. All you can in real, you can do that easily before and after. In real world, you can also do it in. You can only do it in between. And if I do that, it will have a funny side effect. It will also put it after, and so I have to go back and make that one, and then I'm where I am, where I want to be. And this is actually working on this saloon. So I want to. Groupsies, and I'm just going to finish this so it'll be easier for you to see what's happening. Yeah, I don't know. This was a. I mean, it's not so astonishing that somebody may have done this wrong in the first place, because they may have thought that putting lines in between is what users are thinking of, but I don't think they do, but after they had two versions out, they should have gotten enough feedback to correct that one, or just looking at version how they do it. I mean, you couldn't write a pattern before you can make a line before the thing or after. Okay. So we have the experimenters. Where should they go in the I mean, we could also talk about the arrangement of these groupings. Where would you put test users in all of this?
Below external arrangements, maybe?
I wouldn't put it up under the first, but I would put it right after. Because it clearly has a lot to do with what we're going to test. I think. I mean, you could.
I guess it depends on how you're going to use the list. Is it a chronological, you know, are you going to use it chronologically in that, you know, this is the order in which you would do these things?
No, I think I'm sort of want to do it more logically. What,
okay.
If I want to.
In what order you think of things, not necessarily in what order you do things.
Okay, so you can see how this is not designed for usability. Now I have to do. Okay. If I wanted to do it for complete readability, I would do one other thing. I would use. Where's Ariel back here? Actually, I didn't have time to do with the phone. So I would put these headings. So what do we have left? Experimenters. They are really part of how the test is done. The external arrangement, test system, and experimenters is how the test is done. And there are two here. Well, actually, this is a little bit tricky. What do we have left now?
I would put that to what extent experimenters be allowed to help users during the test, as opposed, although that's more.
That's more how the test is done.
Yeah.
And the user aids is more with how the test is done. The tasks
might go off in the first part.
Could go in the very first part. Along with what data is going to be collected.
As long as you're pre-filling the stuff.
I don't know, those first four things are more broad about the more broad, whereas test tasks are going down to the, I don't know. I think of that first one as being a broader category.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, test tasks are part of it. They're an offshoot of it, but so are who the user is going to be, you know, how long each test session is expected to take. Well, the length of the test session may be, or I think would be impacted by, you know, what data is going to be collected, how much needs to be collected.
Maybe this is the remaining ones belonging to one heading. And it maybe goes to here. And it's sort of the test content. Is that a good heading for that? Well, I'm at it. I might get out of your boat. Black. And so this would include these three things. And they are sort of related to what we want to do. Because the user aids and to what extent experiment will be allowed to help, they are rightly grouped together by Nielsen. I see. We may have put one there the wrong place. I want to be here. I want to be. This is all okay. I'm going to do the aerial black, so I think we need that now, otherwise we're getting. See, display makes a lot of difference. In a list like this. And that, I think, was the end. I know the experimenters. I wonder whether they could just be grouped together with the experimenters, with the test system. Because actually some things what the experimenters do, sometimes sometimes it could be people could do it or the system could do it. I'm just going to put these together so we don't have them. Just slowly out here. Okay, so the major groupings we have now are, okay, this we don't know yet. This is test goal and criteria. Mm-hmm. And I was actually going to, think we should change one of those. What we put here, will be used to determine the user affinity to the task. I think that doesn't actually belong here.
That probably goes with the other test content.
Why do you say that it doesn't belong here?
Because I was thinking the criteria we're going to use for evaluation would go here, but this is just.
I look at that as I was reading that as it saying, you know, more of a metric or a.
No, it just means how do you know the person is finished with the task.
Right, because they do task F in
so
I 10, 15 seconds or whatever would be a reasonable.
I think that was in the right place and used in the beginning, but that should go right after test task.
Because we have to determine what tasks are going to be asked to perform before we can say when they finish them.
Yeah, but it's really more what do they do? But we may want to use something here. The evaluation criteria we're going to use in the test. Oh, what was that? This is actually a second. So it's not on Nielsen's list. But clearly you have to know the criteria against you are going to measure. So I will just say what evaluation criteria will be used and stop it right there. I think we need that. Okay, and then we need to do some. Adjustment of the lines, and then I think we're done. So the overall goal is that we're going to use and what data we collect. This is sort of the very broadest view of that. And what's going to be involved in the test. And then we can talk about users and external arrangement and test system. That's also an indicator how we're going to do it. Okay, so I think we're done with those. That's how I would arrange them. I will guess I can send you that list in that format once we're done. Part of the advantage of doing it. And so when you do your test plan, these are things you have to consider. Except when you do your test plan, you may need to look at this more broadly. He's really looking at a usability test. And I may have said evaluation plan, which is a little poorer. The evaluation plan may include a test, but it may also say we'll just do a heuristic walkthrough. And that's the end of it.
There's doing heuristics, and then there's testing it yourself, and then there's having testers test it.
Right.
Because, I mean, the testing it yourself is when you decide, you carefully select a project that will have you exercise the tools so that you can assess it.
Right.
But you're
right.
Not necessarily a representative user.
Right. What test tasks will you be asked to perform would be
the list of things
you want to check out.
Yeah.
There are two ways to approach this. One is function of the program. The other is actually doing some work. And if you do a check on your own, you may want to do both. So you want to actually design a game. I mean, in her case, if you want to check out, you want to go through the process of doing a simple game from beginning to end, ideally. That may not exercise all features. So then another approach is just to exercise all features. So this very simple example, the document you produce with your perfect may not include the problem of adjusting the line spacing, which I just had to do here all the time. So, and you might never figure out that WorkPerfect does this poorly. And so, you could also then you need to look. Okay, there are these 27 features that might occur through the document. Let me try each of them. Let me try to change the line spacing. Yeah, it's right.
But realistically, you'd want to try the most commonly commonly used, or the ones you would use to end up with product X.
Yes.
Although you may not be able to hit every feature.
Right.
But that's what goes both ways.
Okay.
Because you don't get stuff combined the normal way.
You don't get that
chain
reaction.
Yeah. But if you just do something, you may not test all the functions, so you have to watch out for that. Okay, that's it. Okay, so let's look at the metrics. That's too long a list, not the structure. So I think in this case the book violates its own tenets. Because one of the things is not to have a menu too many elements. Any groupings that occur to you on this?
Error handling.
On this long list. Which one?
There's a cluster of things around error handling.
Okay, and they are all together. Actually, I want to move this so the page is on the top. And so let's find, I mean, one strategy of doing such a task, by the way, is to find the easy groups. because you can arrange the groups afterwards. So in one sense, this is a thesaurus building task. If you do any kind of hierarchy that occurs here. So there's the
documentation.
There are four things that go around errors. So I want to come over here. And I want to say black and bowing and I don't know what happened here. Should have done this afterwards, I guess. Okay. I'm just going to copy those four things under there. And it keeps, okay, so wait a minute, I can't have that. So I have to do. There is an option here somewhere to sort. Okay, I'll just use bullets. I was going to. Except it didn't.
It didn't fall at the top on it. Compared to the title.
Same thing. Okay. All right. So this is one thing we want to do. So these two belong together. This is features.
There's a couple on documentation on
the
manuals.
Right. And we'll put those in a minute. So there's the number of fields that they were used. I think all of these are features. Now I'm going to do an edit here. Utilize should be straight from the English language. It's very rarely. I mean, there are some rare occasions when that word should be used, but normally, just used will do. And by the way, since this is so hard, I made myself a macro for Work Perfect that will make a full line, a half line. So I just make a line free and make a half line to achieve the same purpose I achieved before. What happened now? There's something about efficiency. The proposed users using efficient working strategies compared to the users using inefficient strategies.
See, I would group that. I don't know how I group that. I mean, that's really evaluating your user, kind of like the number of times the user sidetracked from focusing on the real task.
The proportion of users who say that they would prefer using this system over. Other stuff.
See, I put that in user satisfaction. There's like three in a row there that are about satisfaction.
Yes, satisfaction, all right.
And then I don't know whether you put our assessment of our users in with their satisfaction or not. You could. His proportion of users, number of times user expresses frustration, proportion that say they prefer using the system. Those are user satisfaction.
Or feedback.
Okay, so let me...
Feedback, yeah, or feedback, satisfaction or feedback.
Let me check on the... So, this is the proportion of user statements. This is the satisfaction piece, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
There's three in a row there.
Oh, right. I can copy the whole. I mean, there are some things that are well grouped here, but the groups are not labeled, and so they are not. Oh. It's not as clear a listing. I'm going to pull this up to half a line. Okay. There's help. I think I see. My block was not in the right place. Where is the... Where did I lose it? I'm looking for the documentation piece. Did I delete it? Now here. This is the health documentation, right? Already, did I delete here now? And I think I can now delete some more stuff here so we can see them all. One. So what's left? I'm going to take the top off.
You've got the cluster at the bottom. It seems to me to be sort of an evaluation of the user. How good were your testers?
It's actually, yeah, I mean, this is how given users use the system. If the system encourages inefficient strategies.
Yeah, I don't know what that category is, but the bottom four seem related.
Yeah, I don't know about the side track. The
dead time is, you know, how long the user's been sitting there.
I wonder if those could be grouped with the first one, the time users to complete us with the time users take to complete a specific task. That they're not all negative, but it's just about how much time.
Well, kind of more time related.
Yeah. I think the bottom four are related more about just what's wrong with the system and how do the problems with the system sidetrack them, so that we might solve the problem that the work easier to work around. Mm-hmm. It's kind of pointing towards the problems. What's the problem inherent in the system that the user had to work around?
The top two about efficiency and the bottom four, you could group all of them in terms of how the user is.
So the first two bullets
are about efficiency.
I Why are the two first two bullets different? They are just they are measuring the same thing, but they use two different measurements to measure them. Seems to me they are all time for task completion.
Yeah.
And one, and you can approach different ways. You can give them half an hour and see how much they can do, or you give them three tasks and take how long it takes. So it's the same.
Well, the first one's one task, and the second one is saying various tasks.
Yeah, but it's still the same thing.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's pretty close.
And maybe I'll put this at the very beginning. Huh? What happened? Where did they go? This is the big. No, this is the first. Yeah. I think maybe I know what happened. I went too far. Interesting. Well. So this is time to completion. And it's just measured in two different ways. So it's really the same thing. Huh? Okay, I'm not the very best mouse person. And that would include the I think I may know what's going on here. Huh? I don't. Must be a line spacing code in here somewhere. It doesn't get the whole line here, so maybe what I should do. My line. Spacing. No, it's one. What else do we have left? The number of times the user had to work around the problem. Where in our headings should that go? Not errors.
That's an unsolvable problem, I call it an error.
No. An error is if the user does something wrong.
A design fault, maybe?
It's a design fault, but what's missing is they have an unsolvable problem.
A feature.
It should go on the features.
Okay.
We have here the existing features. And this unsolvable problem is about a missing feature, right? Okay. Somehow there's a code in here that makes it only half the line. So what I just did, I copied it, I deleted it, and then I copied it back as plain text. Which we get rid of any codes that may be annoying. So this is this one. Efficient work strategies. That's of course is an interesting. It's actually It's more a matter of features. It's really a matter of features. How did, and how they were used. So we should probably say here, features and their use. Because that's the... They use inefficient strategies. It means that they do not use certain features. I'll probably put it before the unsolvable problem. Alright, so this is actually two bullets.
Response time delays.
Response time delays is an entirely different thing from thinking time. And you would not want to put those into one. Response time delay is really something that the system does.
That's thinking time. Oh, okay.
And the number of times user is sidetracked, I don't know. Whether that goes into any. I mean, the interface may sidetrack, may have a.
Do you put that time in
the
features?
No, I don't think so. I think they are all.
But would think time delays maybe be with the time thing, because it's considerations on how long it takes to use.
Well, we could put both of those things into.
Time to completion, you put those at the end.
So we could put response time, system response time. Let me just do this. Now, and you would have to distinguish this by feature or by user action. I mean, because. So you could get system response times for various things the user wants to do, right? And the other is the user think time required. That's actually hard to do. How to distinguish? Because it may be user think time about how to use the system. Or it may be user think time on what to do. I mean, you have a real processor. The user may think about what to write. That's nothing to do with the system. The user may think about features. And so, let me put this as on how to use the system. And we would have to distinguish from thinking on the task. And how you could do that in a test, I have an idea, but it's hard. You have to ask the user. So you would have to have think aloud to get at that. You couldn't get it other ways, I don't think. So in time to use a sidetrack, maybe we can put that under time to completion also. So what we have done here under time to completion, we have put the first two things are just measurements. The other three bullets are influences on. Right? Okay, so the order might not be the optimal yet, but I think I'm going to stop that here. I need to save this document. See, now here, just by example, I could click on File and Save As. Or I could have just done F3. And when you look, the file Save As had the F3 written next to it. Okay, and so this is I'm going to call this Nielsen list for the arrangement. Okay, and I'll send that to you as a real document. Okay, I can save it as well. And that's all I need to project before it sinks. So I can try to turn it off. Or I could ask him to do that. Turn these lights back on. So, I mean, usability studies are a kind of research. And so, what you have here under methods is just research methods. A good bit of it. Not necessarily all of it, but a good bit of it. And so on page 64, just for review, I simply reprinted Nielsen's table. I think I might have done some rearrangements. To make it better, and I had one thing twice, which is not good. Logging actually used a second time shouldn't be there, should just be the first time. So we talked about heuristic evaluation. And performance measures means actually measuring performance of the kind we just talked about, and that you have to have a test. Okay. But the main disadvantage of that measurement is it doesn't really tell you anything. Well, the test tells you something to compare two programs, but it doesn't, just by the numbers they give you, they found 7 unsolvable problems. Well, if one found 7, the other found 3, that's better. But what I really want to know, what were they? And the data about that could, of course, be collected in the same study. But we would want to do this very, very in much detail and get not just how many, but what were they. All right. Now, the thinking aloud should have been just before questionnaires. We are going to discuss it. Observation. You just look what people do. And it could be done in the laboratory, but might be even more useful in real life. Just sit half a day next to a secretary using work and see what she does and where she gets stuck, and a lot of that you can see there. And you can see what features she doesn't use. So if she or she uses the word perfect and she has to save a document under different names 3 times, and every time she clicks on a file and save as, you know, maybe some training would help. The solution to the usability problem may be not in the program, may be in the user. Right? You don't know. So, logging use is sort of a detailed form of observation of only one aspect. You don't see frustration, you don't see the final result of a document. When there are many things you don't see. Actually, find the final document, you could see. You could see all the key steps. You could analyze this for when people used efficient and inefficient. Because you could look at the key steps or mouse clicks. But it's a kind of observation, which is why I grouped it there. Then thinking aloud, questionnaires, interviews, focus groups, all are in effect asking the user to reveal what they are thinking. Except in the thinking aloud, you don't ask them specific questions. You just ask them to verbalize what they're doing. And there was some discussion in the book of pros and cons of think aloud and what you have to watch out for. The question was, does it distort what people are doing?
Depends on what questions you're asking.
Well, you don't ask them. You don't ask them any questions. You just ask them to
think aloud.
I mean,
if you ask them, like, you know, if they're quiet for quite a while and you say,
right,
can you tell me what you're thinking right now, as opposed to, why do you do that? I mean, you can ask them questions, and
yes,
allow it is the type of questions and the way they're,
right,
what you're saying. What
the
you're
other
asking.
Thing is some people don't think well out loud either.
Right.
That's real bad.
They're different, so it works for some stuff, it doesn't work with others, and so the limitation of the method, but also some data you cannot get it any other way. So it's always a matter of alternatives.
And some people are more efficient when they're thinking aloud because they have to hear themselves say
that. Yes, yeah, some people say, what did I say? That's a stupid way to do it, let's do it another way. Whereas if they had just done it, they wouldn't have recognized it. Then you can do questionnaires, you can do interviews, or focus group. That's a focus group is can be very useful, but it's also intensive. It doesn't show here how many experimenters you need, and for focus groups you have to have at least 2 people, one to lead the group and the other to take notes. And that's because you tape it, then you can take notes afterwards. But you often get more from collective thought than from just one individual thought. So particularly if you think in terms of design, participatory design, and actually even if you introduce a piece of software in an organization, the requirements analysis really gets into design issues, because people tell you what they want the software to do, and to have a brainstorming of your own users to sort of design, in a sense, what would be good software, may be very helpful in getting evaluation criteria.
Right, okay, so
right.
You're doing it before, you use this software, you're trying to find out what the users want.
What the users want.
And then going out and...
And you could then either use these data to design it, or you could use the same data to see if there's something out there that will do this. Right? So you could take Well, actually, focus groups, these students would be the best to waive the Sunday reactive software discretion. Because in her case, the software is actually supposed to teach the student how to do it.
They just want it done for them.
And
teachers might be the better focus.
No, actually, which is fine. Actually, I mean, I don't. They still have to sort of. I mean, not having software import bibliographic data because you want to teach students how to do it would be a mistake, in my sense. But they will still need to know the system. But overall, I mean, the students don't know enough, the task well enough, to really give you good design suggestions. So that might not be a good application of focus group of participants. There may be some place of focus group and they use two different software and they talk about what's easy. Maybe. But Alice in the Moon, there's a lot of this kind of thing with children.
A lot of this testing looks to me like it would make sense if you were comparing two systems.
Yes.
But if you're evaluating one system, I'm not sure how much you're going to get out of watching someone else use it. It might be better to just use it yourself and do the heuristic evaluation.
No, because you have knowledge that the people using it don't have, and you will see the kind of mistakes that would just never occur to you.
So if you're not comparing it to anything, you're just going to end up with an assessment of it either working.
You will end up with an assessment of that piece of software.
Which could lead to, depending on where you're working, say, you work for a software company that designs it, it could be leading to what changes would be made for the next release of that software product.
Right. Well, remember that customization. I mean, even when you introduce, even if you have the software, there are still design possibilities if it's customizable. So, I mean, just to give a simple example, I want half line spacing. In your perfect depth, I mean, if you just want a line space, a half a line before something instead of a full line, that is a lot of work. And a full line is too much, you don't want a full line. So you can customize your perfect and you can teach users. Just make a full line space and then put your cursor here and press Alt H. Get you half a line.
Right, I can see it being useful for like the CMS. Like if you had a large organization, you wanted to implement the CMS, and the in-house designers customized something to a certain point, but you want to, before you kind of open it up to everyone, you want to have, observe some staff members using it to see what worked and what didn't from your customization.
I think spreading evaluations are working in school is how you're going to teach it to faculty when you go to implement it. You know, what models am I going to use? How am I going to explain it? If I know it works pretty well, except there's this one little thing that everybody gets wrong.
Well, then you're going to, if you know that you're going to use it with kids and you know that they're going to need instruction to use it, then when you do your test, you have to deliver that instruction.
Well, but how do you know what instruction to give them until you let them have at it for a while?
If you have them, if you have somebody get at it without instruction, you will find out what you need to instruct.
They couldn't find whatever. It's obvious to me, but I'm going to have to point out the save my search button up here because they'll never find it on their own.
There are just other pages that more sort of has readings on methods. It's usability.net, which I gave you one top page on. It's really not good. You can click on one of these things and it will give you information about it. So that's a very nice resource. It's nicely done. And this other piece is also a good piece of information about and so there are a bunch of additional things listed there. And just page 67 is just a reminder on these computer assisted usability But it's a full acronym. It must be user. I see the usability system engineering. I think that might mean. They're just tools that make it easier to do usability testing. And the first one is prototyping tools. Those are more important for, I mean, many of these tools are more oriented towards design than towards evaluation. The prototyping tool particularly is... Other questions on Nielsen? Or could you share with the class how you can see applying something? I mean, something that stuck you in Nielsen that you could use in your evaluation project.
In the very beginning, I kind of outlined the heuristics and stuff. The other one was the main dimensions of user knowledge and just, you know,
what page is that?
Page 44. Working with kids nowadays, they're probably good with general computer stuff, but probably, particularly if you're, are probably, at least at mine, aren't very big on the knowledge of domain doing actual research, and they're
okay.
Also not big, if I'm just instituting a new ILS, they're not going to have any domain knowledge of that system either.
But domain knowledge is not about the system. Domain knowledge would be about actually in
the system. They're not going to be an expert user of that system.
Yes, so in the library system, domain knowledge would actually be knowledge in the topic that they search about.
Okay.
So if they do a search on a history paper, it's their history knowledge. If they do some search on something else, it's their domain knowledge about something else. And we can talk about how that would influence design and therefore evaluation. The expert user of system is just a matter of, do they know the particular system? And the computer experience, do they have general experience? The general computer experience, for example, would say if you say the shortcut key is Control S, and the, maybe there are no people like that around anymore, but I had to find out what is wrong. That was Control and then S. And of course, that doesn't work. So there are many just little things like that that can get extremely frustrating if you don't do them right, because they will prevent you from using the system efficiently. That's general computer. There are other things in general computer knowledge that, like restart the program, and those kinds of things would go in extended computer experience. Now, there's a whole... there's a middle ground, an expert user of a type of system. Okay, so if in content management system, the functionality is similar. So if somebody has used a content management system for one content management system for 10 years, they can go with the next one very quickly. When somebody has never used one, even though they have extended computer experience, they will have a much higher learning curve. It also depends, of course, how similar those systems are. And that goes into the, when you set interface standards, that in controlled home, it's fairly standard now across all Windows applications to go to the top. I think there's one Microsoft application that doesn't do it. Think Notepad. But most applications control home, top, control end to the end. So, but now how do you use an evaluation? So, let's assume that for your school library application, you start from the assumption that your students don't have high domain expertise in any domain they're searching. There's just multiple domains that do not have high domain expertise. What would that translate into evaluation?
You need something that would be easy to pick up in the software?
Well,
you want stuff that's going to help them with searching a lot of extra terminology and synonyms and picking up related terms, because they will have a worksheet that they're researching cows, and they're not going to look up bovines and jerseys and dairy products and whatever else.
Right. So you need the system to supply the domain knowledge in any domain that they are likely to search under.
Looking at the evaluation checklist, that might come under help. I don't know, help or documentation. But when you look at the evaluation checklist, I guess one of the ones that was in here was really clear. It had all the interface stuff together. And the one that I did, it's sort of all spread out. But in the different sections, anything that's to do with the user interface. So it doesn't really apply in the, what platform are you using, but when you look at ease of use and learning curve, you're going to apply the usability heuristics. And when you look at the inputs of something, if it's automatic imports, it doesn't, but certainly if it's user input, you look at the templates, you look at the screens. So anything that touches the user, you're looking at the usability heuristics of it. And that's going to be the documentation, the interface.
Right. But I mean, in the example we just discussed, this thesaurus that would capture domain knowledge would be a feature that's in my outline in part B, the feature of that kind of software. It's not a generic criterion that apply across all types of software.
Right.
If you have software to help air traffic controllers, that would not be a feature. But in a system that supports searching library materials, that would be a feature.
That's part of your task analysis and your list of desirable features.
Right.
That's not an interface. I'm not always clear. It's like the usability seems to, on the one hand, it's interface stuff, and on the other hand, it seems to extend to be almost anything you want it to be in software specification. When you start clumping in task analysis and feature specification, is that really usability or is that content? Is content separate from usability?
Well, Nielsen has a nice diagram on that. And
I put it separate, but I'm not sure if it is.
Well, if you look on page 25,
so this is system acceptability.
That's what he calls it. In we call it software acceptability, and so there is practical and social in his distinction.
So in this case, I'd say that feature specification is up there with utility. Which
yes.
Is part of usefulness, but not part of usability.
Right. But the usability is not the only evaluation you do.
Correct.
I think you're evaluating practical acceptability.
Correct, and that's what I was saying. The use, I thought we were asking where does usability fit in to the evaluation. I thought that's what you asked.
But the usability...
Or did you ask how does Nielsen's book help you?
The original, this discussion originated and sort of deviated from this diagram, what's again, for the user?
Page 44,
on the user characteristics that you have to take into account. And so we were discussing how do you take into account how domain knowledgeable users are. And supporting domain, ignorant about domain novices is sort of a feature that a software might have, but it's specific to the kind of software. It's not a general usability. Well, I'm not sure whether it's usability. You could, it's really usefulness, that point of utility, but as you pointed out, that feature of supplying domain knowledge could be analyzed according to how usable it is, as developed to how useful it is. And if it has a lot of, if the thesaurus is very complete and it gives good suggestions, but it's hard to get those good suggestions or it gives it in the poor format, it has high utility but poor usability. And you want both to be high. So that we were discussing user characteristics as to how they would influence your evaluation. But your evaluation takes into account at least all the acceptability of figure one. That's the total framework. Any other questions on Nielsen? I just have two. There's a bunch of comments here, but two I wanted to highlight. One, Nielsen sort of downplays customizability, and I think that his thought is that if you customize, then you lose compatibility. I mean, if for one organization heavily customizes rules for their specific kind of documents, then the secretary who moves from there someplace else may be at a disadvantage. But that's not really my problem in my organization is how to get people to do documents most efficiently. If I hire a temp, I may be in trouble. But actually, I'm not, because that temp wouldn't be very efficient anyway. And that means she may not be using the customized features. You may not want to change the shortcuts. You want to add shortcuts, but not exchange the existing ones. So somebody who is coming in as a temp, who still use Word as they used to. They just wouldn't take advantage of the customizability. But to my mind, in some cases, if I can customize to my specifications, that may give the edge to one program over another. The program B out of the box may be better for what I want to do. But software A out of the box. But software A customized may be the best. Okay, so when you evaluate, you really need to evaluate in, if I buy this software, what can I do with it? Does that involve some customization? Or that involves writing a 3-page tutorial? Which then, after people have read it, makes it better to use. Those are things to be considered. So customization, I think, is, to my mind, it's an important piece and sort of extends the software design and production sphere beyond the software manufacturer to the user.
The one that we're finding a lot in ILS is that a lot of companies now sell stuff in modules. It's less integrated, and so, you know, is it better to get Destiny with X number of add-ons, or is it better to get this system that can be modified by itself, or is this one that's already integrated that has everything, or...
Yes, it's...
the number of options seems to be nearly infinite, as far as I can tell.
Yes. Okay, so let's take a break, and we'll reconvene at 12:30. Is that our schedule? Yes. And we'll look at. Then in the afternoon, we'll go to 3:15. Give you a break at 3:30, 4:30. Yes, sir. Mitchell. Okay, so we'll be done by 4:30. End of this lecture.